Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is This Week in iPhone, episode 78 for March 18th, 2010. The iPads are for a friend! This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Ally. All right, it's time for This Week in iPhone. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, the App Store, and all that fun stuff tonight. Or today, it's light out still here where I am in Rockford, Illinois. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, it's always great to be here. And it's daylight here, too.
Awesome.
In Denver. Yeah. What's the name of the show again?
Well, right now it's This Week in iPhone.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll get it memorized eventually.
Well, I have something to say right after I introduce Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing? So what, are you going to talk to Bill Palmer and taking his strategy?
Just changing the name every week?
Yeah. It's going to be the iProngcast.
Then it'll be This Week in Beat iPhones.
Something. Beating up iPhones? Something like that. Yeah. Okay, so before we get into that, I would just like to say happy birthday to macOS Ken. Today is his birthday. Ken Ray, he's an awesome guy. Go check out his podcast if you haven't already done it. Daily, Mac, iPhone, Apple, all that stuff, news. It's really condensed in audio and awesome. And you should totally check it out. It's one of my favorite podcasts. So macosken.com. And so here's the deal with the name right now. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people and they're like, do you want to do that? Are you sure you want to do that? How do you feel about it? And I made the decision to change the name, one, because I'm moving away from iPhone Alley, but two, because I'm not very creative. And so I just said This Week in iPhone. So I'd like to put it out to the listeners because, you guys listen and enjoy, and we're very grateful for that. And, we do this for you. So I would like to figure out what you guys think about the name change. You can send an email. podcast@iPhoneAlley.com is still the address that we get emails to. And you can also send me a Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. You can send me a Twitter regarding your thoughts about the name. I'm totally willing to change it. If you guys think that This Week In is, exclusively Leo's, or it just sounds too much like the Twit Network, I'm totally willing to change it. I don't want to step on any toes or confuse anybody. And so if most of the people come back and say, maybe you should change it to something else, then we'll work on a different name. And hopefully that won't confuse everybody.
Did you get some
too
feedback
late
already?
For me, that's okay.
Yeah.
What was that, Adam?
Did you get some feedback already? It sounds like maybe you've heard some things.
I got several tweets from people. A couple people said, oh, it sounds like this, Twit, or, people have asked me if I was acquired by Twit. And so that kind of confusion, I don't want that to be there for, new and existing, listeners. So,
Yep. Totally understand. So
yep.
Let us know.
Yeah. Podcast next iPhoneAlley.com. And I'll get
next week will be Michael's iPhone Palooza.
I like that name.
Actually, that's not bad.
That's way more creative than I've gotten so far. I've just thought, iPhone Cast? No, wait, who does something with cast at the end?
Oh, you're more than welcome to do that.
Oh, I wouldn't want to do that because of the confusion thing, even though it's,
I'm not going to trademark pod or anything like that. And then send lawyers after people.
Yeah, yeah.
We won't name names.
Like Apple?
We weren't naming names.
God, Michael, I'm not follow directions, do you?
I know. No, okay. So
they didn't get the trademark on I. Did you read that?
No. Is this a recent thing? Or like five years?
Recently. No. Recently.
Yeah, it was just a few days ago, I think.
Wait, they were trying to trademark the lowercase I thing?
Yeah.
Well,
something like that.
There was some company that made a product that had the lowercase I at the end. And so Apple took him to court, giving him the smackdown, saying, no, you can't do that. It sounds too much like iPod. And the court said, actually, no, it doesn't. People can do this.
Yeah, yeah. I think Apple should sue themselves for the name iPad because it sounds too much like iPod. Because honestly, how many times have you guys, you know,
I'm gonna do it a million times if I haven't, and I'm sure I've done it already.
Yeah, I've definitely done it already. Okay, so let's move on. Jeff, have you played with your Nexus One yet?
I totally have, yeah.
Do you have anything to report? Would you like to give us a rundown of how you feel about the Nexus One?
Sure, I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, so first, the screen is beautiful on the Nexus One. I think it makes the screen on the iPhone almost look like a low resolution display. That's how sharp and clear the Nexus One display is. So I was really, really impressed with that. And much to my surprise, I think the Nexus One feels more comfortable in my hand than an iPhone.
Mm.
And I was not expecting that. It balances very nicely. It has a really good weight. It's like not too heavy, not too light. It doesn't feel like it's cheap. And that's really nice. And it has a nice little camera on it, although I was really surprised everything that I shot with the camera has a red cast to it.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, and videos the same way.
Maybe a settings issue or maybe you shouldn't do stuff, like maybe you shouldn't use the camera in like a dark room or something.
Or any room if you don't want a red cast.
Well, I mean, like if you know, all those red lights that you have in your house.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. But so how is the software?
You know, I wanted to like it a lot more. I really, really did. The problem that I have with the software on the Nexus One is that there are no guidelines. There's no standardization for any interfacing on any application. And it's just incredibly confusing. You have to memorize how each application works as opposed to being able to jump in and seeing all the familiar buttons and being able to just go. And with that scroll ball thing on there, you have to guess a lot of times, well, do I need to flick the screen with my finger? Do I use the scroll ball? Do I have to tap a little next button? How do you navigate through things? And there's no standardization. So it's the interfacing on the thing is an absolute mess.
Have you looked at the development guidelines? Or is there a human interface guideline? I assume there is.
I don't think there is. And based on the applications I've seen, I can't imagine that there is. Or if there is, it's stashed away somewhere where regular developers don't get to see it. Because, there's really, the interface is just all over everywhere.
So you're talking about third-party applications or stock applications?
Everything. So Google's own apps plus third-party apps. No standardization in any of them.
Hmm.
And then the little silkscreen buttons on the bottom of the display, I can understand why they're there after playing with this thing for a while. And it's because most of the people that will be jumping into the Nexus One will be jumping in from Blackberries and things like that. And so they're used to devices that have a lot of the static type interfaces.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason the little scroll ball thing is on there. But the problem is where the buttons sit, especially when you're using the keyboard, it's far too easy to accidentally tap the silkscreen buttons. And there's been more than one occasion where I was typing something on the little screen and accidentally hit the home button. And off I went out of the application.
Yeah.
And I found that the display wasn't nearly as responsive as the iPhone display. So tapping on things, sometimes you'd have to tap two or three times before it would register. But, you know, that said, for the most part, it worked really well. I mean, the screen itself worked pretty well. The whole thing with background applications, they really need to fix the way the interface works. And there's a common theme to my complaints, and it goes back to the interface. they need to fix the way the interface works so there's some standardization, because it's very difficult to tell if you have applications running in the background. So, you know, on the iPhone, you hop into an app, you do something, and you go back to the home screen, you are now out of the application. On the Nexus One, going back to the home screen means you may be out of the application, or it may still be running in the background.
So how do you, I've never looked at how the background applications are managed on an Android phone. How does that work?
Well, considering the fact that you can have several applications running without realizing it, the background app stuff, the multitasking, actually works pretty well. And that's a good thing, because there were several times where I had multiple apps running and I didn't realize it until like the turn-by-turn direction thing suddenly started talking to me.
Like from your pants.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes hearing a voice near your pocket can be a cool thing. And other times, not so much. And this, and when it happened to me, it was night. I was in the car alone. And all of a sudden, there's this woman's voice. And she's telling me where to go. And I'm looking around like, what the hell? And finally, I realized, oh my God, I think the Nexus One is talking in my pocket. Pulled it out and woke it up. And sure enough, it had been running like I don't know how long, doing instructions in the background. And the ambient noise around me had been loud enough that I just didn't know. And she happened to say something in one of the little quiet points. And that's when I heard her in my pocket.
So do you think the interface for managing multitasking on the Android is better or worse than what the Pre has? Because I love what the Pre does.
I think it's better on the Pre.
Okay. Yeah, because it's very obvious what's going on, that you have different apps open.
Right. And on the Nexus, you might be able to tell. Sometimes in the home screen little menu bar, there will be extra icons for applications that are doing something. Other times not. And it goes back to the consistency in the interface. And until they can get that nailed down, and I don't think they ever will, but until they can get that nailed down, this is going to be a phone that I think fits a lot of people that want to have that whole I like to play under the hood all the time sort of attitude, or for people that haven't tried an iPhone but know they want something more than what their current smartphone is, and so they go and take a look at the Nexus One. Yeah. And so with all the little complaints that I said, if the iPhone didn't exist or if I had never seen an iPhone, I would be very excited to have a Nexus One. It's, to me, this is the only phone that's come along so far that actually offers a viable alternative to the iPhone.
Cool. I'm hoping to get one soon. One of the developers, I'm not sure if he wants me to tell anyone that he's letting me borrow it, but I'm going to be borrowing someone's Nexus One for a little bit and then helping him get rid of it. He doesn't want it and I don't want it either. But I will be able to play with it for a while and check it out and see what it's all about. And so I'm very excited to do that.
I got a question for Jeff. I'm just curious. So on the app, the whole standardization of apps, because this is actually a complaint I've had about Apple in recent years to some degree, because once we've gone to OS X and we have Xcode and stuff like that, you know, Apple does have sort of the user human interface guidelines still, but they're a lot looser actually even than they used to be, you know, back in the OS 9, OS 8 days, where it was like, you know, every right. menu will have these items, this will be this way, that, you know, it was much more dictated and there's a lot more freedoms among developers. But still Apple has, like with an Xcode, the interface builder, right, which has all your standard buttons and layouts and things like that. And I think a lot of developers use those tools, and so you end up sort of with this standardized apps. So do you know, like with a development environment like the Nexus Ones, do they just have, is it just like the developers are on their own to, like, you know, make your own buttons, or is there a standard toolkit where there's, you know, all the buttons look the same but they're just slightly different color palettes? Or, I mean, because you at least have that on the iPhone, right? The buttons are all kind of the same. The menus are kind of in the same places, and it sounds like that's not the case in the Nexus One. And I'm just curious if it's because developers have more freedoms, or there's not the tool set, or if you even know.
Now, I haven't downloaded the Android SDK. Mm-hmm. And so keep that in mind. But based on what I've seen in the applications, there probably aren't a lot of pre-built components for developers to work with.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, I'm basing that just on all the applications that I've played with, including the applications that Google wrote specifically for Android.
It
really feels like they're starting from scratch for every single app.
We know that Google's horrible at user interface. I'm sorry, but you know, I know people love their web apps and stuff like that, but even in the Google universe, using different Google apps is like to a certain degree.
It's totally nuts.
Yeah. So the Android is just an extension of that same interface style, you know, the Wild West, do whatever you want. And that's the biggest problem I see with this phone.
See, and really. I think that's what people forget about. And that was another one of my complaints as I looked at different, Android devices, the Droids and, you know, some of the other phones that are out there, even the Symbian phones and the Windows mobile phones and stuff like that, is that each phone manufacturer, you know, they're all based on the same operating system and in theory should run the same things, right? But every piece of hardware is different, and then every hardware manufacturer makes their own tweaks on top of the OS. And this is the same problem that I think the Windows world has. And, you know, so a lot of people like to complain about the walled garden, but the one advantage of the walled garden, you know, and saying this is the way it is, and we have one hardware platform that you code to and you can expect these things, is that you end up with apps that work right on the device that you have, right? As opposed to,
yeah,
you know, you're hearing these stories now, if you've been like on the Android, well, this app works with, and you got to go through a phone list, right? These phones, but not these phones, because these phones don't have these features and these phones do, and this app takes, and we get a little bit of that on, even with the differences between the iPhone and the iPod Touch, but I think Apple is, you know, trying to limit the amount of variation in the hardware because of some of these issues that you start to run into, right?
Well, another problem you have with Android is that you can be running one of several different versions of of the Android OS, and it's not easy for people to tell unless they know what the differences are and can actually get their hands on the device and look at it and go, okay, yeah, this has this feature, so it's this version of Android. And then when you throw on top a customized interface, like what's the new one, the Backflip from Motorola? Okay, that's Android 1.5 with a Motorola custom interface on top.
Right.
So how is the average user going to know that they're running a version of Android that can't see most of the apps that are on the Android online store thing, and they won't be able to do the turn-by-turn directions?
Right.
The average user won't know.
Yeah, and I think this is where Google might run into some problems with developers, is if they suddenly have to start tweaking their apps for every different device that's out there. You know, you're going to have so many Android devices running different versions with different hardware specs. It's just got to be, you know, someone being a developer, you're like, great, it's got a huge base in terms of total numbers. You know, you can say X millions of phones are running Android operating system, but it's like you start dividing it down, and it's like, well, these are doing that, and this are doing that. Oh, and this hardware, you know, has this kind of camera, and that one has that kind of camera, and this one can do video, and that one can't do video, and this one has a physical keyboard, and this one doesn't have a physical keyboard. And I can only imagine, you know, being a developer, what that kind of environment's like. And that has to, you know, make some impact.
Oh, I'm sure it does. And I do not envy it. Wow. I do not envy Android developers, because they do have to face all these issues you're talking about. I mean, with the App Store from Apple, okay, yes, you have to submit your application and hope that Apple approves it, and then you just sit and wait. And then maybe down the road they decide, oh, we changed our mind, your app is out. Okay, that's a pain to deal with. But at least you know when you write an app for the iPhone and iPod Touch that you have the standardized set of tools to work with, and it's going to work across all the devices, and all you have to do is hope that your end users have actually updated their operating system on the device, because you can do that easily.
Right, and with a few exceptions of, you know, if you take advantage of the camera, obviously you're ruling out certain iPod touches and things like that. But they're kind of limited known variables, right? You don't have hundreds of variables. You maybe have a few dozen that you're dealing with.
Right.
And I feel like that's why a lot of, you know, my friend David Bernard at App Cubby, he's, I think he's decided to not do Android stuff right now. He thought about it, considered it, and looked at the platform for a little while and just, you know, I haven't asked him, and maybe it'd be good to have him on, but I'm guessing that's part of the reason why he decided not to.
It would be interesting to hear why specific developers are either going to or staying away from Android.
Yeah, I'll get him on. I'll do it.
That would be very cool.
Yeah. Okay. So before we go any further, I would like to talk about our first sponsor, and that is Camalert, K-A-M-A-L-E-R-T. And Camalert is an iPhone application that turns your iPhone into a camera surveillance and personal alarm system. And it actually does three separate things. So the surveillance thing is really cool if you're in a hotel room or if you're leaving your office for a few moments and you want to make sure nobody's getting into trouble or looking at your stuff or anything like that. So if you set it up in surveillance mode, it just sits there and turns on the camera and it watches for motion. So when it detects motion, it starts taking pictures. And then at that point, it sends out text messages and to let you know, either you or friends or whoever you set up to have it send text messages to, as well as emailing the photos. So you get those and you can check those out and see what's going on in that location. It also provides you with an option to, if you have a medical emergency, you can set up contacts for it to send text messages to and will actually send out your current location. So if you're having a medical emergency, that's really good. It also has a personal danger option. So if you're one of those people who has to, you know, walk home at night, maybe in a city or in a bad area, and you want to make sure you have the option to, you know, send an email or a text message with your current location, you can do that. It'll also sound an alarm optionally if you want to do that. And it's $4.99 in the App Store, Camalert, and it has all three of these things, the medical emergency, the surveillance mode, and the personal danger thing. It's very cool. You can check that out in the App Store, Camalert, K-A-M-A-L-E-R-T. It's $4.99 in the App Store. And with that, we will move on to some more stuff. And I think that we should talk about briefly, at least, that AT&T, an AT&T compatible version of the Nexus One is now available. The one that you have, Jeff, right, is the it'll work with T-Mobile and AT&T, but it doesn't do the AT&T 3G service, right?
Right, right.
So this new version works with Rogers and AT&T. So I guess it's the standard. It's the more standard version of the 3G stuff.
Right. And now, just kind of on a not exactly side note, but I guess kind of leaning out note, what I noticed was that the cell coverage that I was getting on T-Mobile was not nearly as good as the coverage I was getting with AT&T on my iPhone. And I expected that they would be at least on par. But AT&T, at least in the Denver metro area, seems to have much better coverage than T-Mobile.
Yeah, I kind of assumed that was the case. I think in my area, that's what most people are saying, that 3G is very spotty, if existent at all, on T-Mobile. But you know, AT&T is great in my area and in many larger metro areas.
Well,
so that's great.
I think I had read, too, recently some reports coming out saying that Nexus One phone sales have actually been pretty slow, or, you know, I'm trying to find the number here. I want to say it was like 100 and...
You know, I've heard that, but
I think it was 150,000 or something like
that. 150,000 units, something like that, and that it might likely be just due to the fact that it launched on T-Mobile, which in the States is like the number four carrier, right? Are they number four?
Of four.
Yeah,
it's like four of four or something
so,
like that.
So, you know, this is big news, it coming to AT&T, because that could open up, you know, open it up to more customers and more users, I think, especially if what you guys are saying is true. You know, I here in San Diego, it's my understanding that T-Mobile is also pretty spotty in terms of coverage, or they're kind of ranked the lowest when I talk to people, because when I was looking at switching way back when from Verizon, which is, you know, awesome coverage here, I was concerned about AT&T and I was concerned about T-Mobile. And when I pulled my friends who had both, you know, AT&T came out slightly better than T-Mobile. So,
yeah, I'm looking at the T-Mobile coverage area right now, and there are just itty bitty dots on the map where you can get 3G coverage for T-Mobile. But yeah, so the 3G version that works on AT&T and Rogers is the same price as the other unlocked Nexus One, $530. It's unlocked, no contract. Just pop your SIM card in there and it works.
All right, so I have a question for you, and that question is, which Nexus One commercial on TV is your favorite? And that's exactly the answer I expected to get.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? Because the Droid, in the same reports, right, the Droid did much better, but they had a huge marketing campaign around the Droid.
Right, and with the Nexus One, I cannot recall seeing a single Nexus One commercial on TV.
I don't think they did. Yeah, I think it was all online and word of mouth, basically.
Right. So basically, to know about a Nexus One, you either need to be staying up on top of what's going on in the tech industry, or you have a friend that's in it and can say, hey, you need to buy this. Otherwise, how would you even know that the Nexus One existed?
That's really interesting, because I was at a party recently and somebody had asked me about the iPhone. They were in need of a new phone, wanted to get rid of their BlackBerry. We're looking at the other BlackBerry devices and were very interested in the iPhone, but felt, you know, the overall kind of costs, because they'd have to switch to AT&T and stuff like that from their current network, which was Verizon, which I guess in this case really wouldn't help them. But, you know, I mentioned the Nexus One, not because they could necessarily get it on Verizon, but just because it was an alternative, you know, phone, piece of hardware to look at, and they had no idea it even existed, which I thought was interesting, because they were looking at other, you know, Android phones, Droid phones, but didn't know about the Nexus One.
Yeah, well, there's so many phones now, I can't remember which model is which I think is another problem with the Android platform. The one that Verizon has, that's the Droid, right?
They have the Droid and the Droid Eris. I think there's two different models, right?
Yep.
Okay, so the Droid is the one where they have the big billboards where they say, it's a whole big bucket full of does.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you know, that's what you're seeing out there. It's the billboard for that phone. You're not seeing stuff for the Nexus One. So when people go out looking for Android phones, excuse me, that's what I think people are thinking of. It's that Droid phone.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the response I get from people who don't follow phone news every day like I do, their response to me telling them about the Nexus One is, wait, this is another Google phone, a quote unquote, the Google phone, you know, because everybody feels like the Droid was the Google phone and the G1 was the Google phone. They don't realize that this Nexus One is actually being sold by Google and is different in certain ways than the other ones. And, you know, it's the only one with what is it? 2.1?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Nexus One is the only phone with 2.1.
That's another thing that I think it just is a detriment to the consumer, is that there are so many different versions and, you know, you can't get the most recent version on all the phones.
Right.
And if you can't get an update, how does that work? And this is another problem I see with the Android platform. It doesn't have that seamless feel that you get with the iPhone. And now granted, because Apple controls everything, hardware and software, which has always been one of their biggest assets, they can make it very easy for people just to plug a phone in and it does its magic stuff. With Android phones, what's the process to get a software update? And how do you get stuff on or off the phone too? And part of that answer is, if you connect your Nexus One to your computer, it doesn't mount like a hard drive. But if you know to grab the top of the screen and flick down, this magic little menu will appear where you can say mount USB SIM card memory thing.
Oy vey.
And you tap that, and then it shows up on your desktop just like any other drive. Now, the cool thing is you can actually put other files on there and make your own directories and everything, and that's cool. And then iPhoto recognizes it, and it'll suck pictures off of it. But it's one of those steps that the average user is not going to figure out. And it's, in my opinion, not a necessary step. You should be able to plug your phone into your computer, and it should just do its thing. You know, come up and say, oh, hey, I need a software update, and here it is. Or here's pictures, let me drop them into iPhoto for you.
Well, yeah, you know, that's weird. I'm sorry, just real quick comment on that, because I have a digital audio recorder, and it wouldn't necessarily have to automatically mount, but why wouldn't it just drop down that screen on the phone when you plug it in? Because this audio recorder I have, when you plug it in, it recognizes it was plugged into a USB, and then it says, oh, what do you want to do? Do you want to use this as an audio interface that you can plug a mic into and you know, use it as audio interface for your computer, or do you want to mount it as a I.O., you know, USB drive? But it's smart enough to know, oh, you plugged in a USB cable, I need to ask you something. But it comes up on the device screen automatically.
That's a totally reasonable way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the big issue I have with so many products these days is a lack of good user experience. There are so many developers that just don't think through how people, like real people who aren't engineers, are going to use these products. They don't want to plug it in and possibly debug, you know, a piece of hardware. They're plugging it in because they want to do something with it, and it should be very obvious how you make it do something. If not just automatically pop up, then give you a little message like your audio recorder does.
Oh, Michael. I'm laughing because I'm a developer and I work with a lot of developers, and it's funny because the general attitude is like, what? No, this makes total sense. I've been working on this for 6 months. This makes absolute sense. How do you not get this?
Exactly why you think it makes sense, because you've been working with it for six months.
You're seeing the point. But that's generally what happens among developers when they're, you know, developing user interface experiences by themselves without an expert. Or, you know, in the case of Apple, we have Apple sort of dictating things, and a lot of people go, well, I don't want to be dictated to as a developer. And it's that whole classic argument, you know, it'll go on for ages. And like, how did you not know you had to just, all you have to do is click here, go down here, scroll to this menu here, click there. There, look, it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all these guys have to do is go to their mom and say, "Hey, mom, can you do this? Can you make this thing work? And if you can't, you didn't do it right."
Fun. But I guess here I'm going to bring it back. So, you know, with the AT&T compatible Nexus One, I do think opening up the network is going to help. And if they, and Jeff, you're absolutely right, if they put some marketing dollars behind it, and AT&T probably will, I think Google's going to have a better job selling more Nexus Ones. So I just thought it was funny all these people coming out kind of saying it was a flop. I don't know that it was necessarily a flop. I think you have two major factors that's kind of kicked off against it. And I don't know if it was deliberate. I mean, was Google trying to soft launch the thing and see where it was going to go before they opened it up? Or were they just, you know, biding their time till the exclusivity launch agreement, you know, wore out before they put marketing dollars behind it? I don't really know.
Yeah, it is weird. Okay, so we should talk about the iPad, because that's the big news of the year so far, right? The iPad, have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, so it's available for pre-order right now, and it's limit 2 per customer. So that started, when did that open up?
The 12th.
So last week.
Friday.
And on Friday. And you can order up to 2 of them, and you can also reserve one for in-store pickup. They also threw up the 3G details, which is essentially what we already heard from the iPad presentation, which is that if you get the iPad Wi-Fi plus 3G model, then you can, there's no contract for the 3G coverage, or for the 3G data rather. And so it's, what is it? $15 for $250 megabytes.
Yep.
And then $30 for unlimited.
Per month.
Yeah, per month. And you go into the iPad settings, and you set all that up right in there, and you toss in your credit card information. You don't call anybody. You don't deal with AT&T. You don't have to bring it anywhere. You just put it in there and say, I want a month, and then you can turn it off whenever you want to. No contract. It's super cool.
Yeah. I do think you have to cancel though.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it auto enrolls you every month. So you have to hit the cancel button. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Of course, we'll know more when we get them. And the iPad, the 3G version, as we probably all know, is coming out later in April, right? At the end of April, probably June or May. I mean, I know what the months are. Let's see here. Oh, interesting note. Did you guys see this? That they changed the mute switch to a rotation lock switch.
Yeah. A lot of people were excited about that, and I think it makes sense. I guess I don't have an ebook reader, but I guess this is really important for ebook reading, which I can totally understand, because I guess I've tried it on my iPhone and certain apps, you know. Well, when you're laying down, it becomes a problem if the screen can't really get oriented when it's in a sort of vertical
or a weird angle. Oh, yeah. If you're sitting on a couch and reclining or something like that, you want to. I think that's good. It does suck though that you're losing the mute switch, because that's one of my favorite features of the iPhone, is that you turn a switch and then no audio is coming out of that thing. Good, bad. What do you feel about that? You think it's you think they should still have a mute switch?
Does it have volume sliders on it?
It still has the volume rocker, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess if you just change the functionality that the volume rocker all the way down, I mean, it's essentially mute. I mean, that's not too bad. Yeah, it's a few more.
Although you are killing your alarms, but then again, there's no clock application, so you won't have an alarm anyway. So who cares? Maybe this. I'm guessing this is something that Apple decided to do when they used it for a while or let other people use it and figure out.
Well, you know, I'm trying to think if there could be some sort of why could they have dual functionality like they do with the take a screenshot where you hold the home button down and hit the power on off button. What if you held the home button down and flipped the switch and it was mute? And if you didn't do that, it was rotation lock. Would that not work?
I'm sure it would work. It's kind of confusing.
Is it confusing, the screen, take a screenshot thing confusing?
Well, I know how to do it, but I don't think my mom does.
Yeah. Back to that earlier point. Yeah, got your point. But at least we don't lose the functionality. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Forced with completely losing the functionality or having it be a little more confusing, I would opt for a little more confusing or ambiguous.
Yeah, and honestly, it may be a situation where on the iPad, there are almost no situations where you feel like you need to mute, and way more situations where you feel like you want the screen to stay locked in a certain orientation.
Hey, Michael?
Yeah.
You know, I think we lost Jeff.
Yeah, I know we did. He told me he had to restart Skype, so I'm adding him back in.
Oh, sorry.
That's why it's so quiet, why you couldn't hear the lack of pants.
There he is. Pants.
Skype, Skype, Skype. I shake my fist at you, you bitch.
There goes the clean tag this week.
Oh damn it.
Clean tag. There's no clean tag anymore. I changed it. I'm too lazy to get rid of the swear words. And that's another thing. If you guys, send me feedback. I feel like most people don't care about the swears, but if you're uncomfortable with it, send an email, podcast@iphonealley.com, and we'll figure something out if we get enough feedback on that, on swear words. But moving right on.
You could do the safe word thing.
Safe word thing?
Yeah. We say monkey or something right before we do the swear word. So they can quickly mute or skip or something.
So they can shield their ears or something?
Yeah.
I vaguely remember them doing that on like Mac Break Weekly, didn't they?
Something like that, yeah.
It's something like, okay, let's move on.
I guess we could also do it like Angry Mac Bastards, where we just say, sit back and hold on, because this is going to be a hell of a ride.
True.
We could go in that direction, sure.
So on the iPad thing, did you order two, Michael, didn't you?
I ordered two, and they're not for me, seriously.
Oh, yeah, not for me.
Yeah, I know. They. I'm actually helping out a developer who's not in the U.S. I'm gonna buy them and quickly send them via FedEx over there. And I'm actually picking up a third at the Apple Store, which is cool, because I didn't really plan on buying an iPad on day one.
Picking one up.
So I hope I'm picking one up. I reserved one. It says I have one reserved.
Then you'll get it.
Cool. Wait, so you actually have three?
I will have three,
yes. I thought there was a limit two per customer.
For the pre-orders, and I guess they're not really paying attention to the Apple Store orders when you request to have one reserved at the store as well.
Good for you.
So, yeah, it'll be fun to get a box that has a shiny iPad on there and send it to some other country.
You know, now I have no idea how much of the conversation I missed thanks to Skype letting me in its special way.
Screen lock thing.
Oh, okay. That's actually really cool. I want that on my iPhone now.
Yeah, do you think that's more useful than the mute thing? I guess the big question I posed to Adam was, you know, whether the mute or the rotation lock was more useful in the iPad.
On the iPhone, I think mute is more useful because it's a phone.
Yep.
On the iPad, I like it being the rotation lock.
Yeah, you're not going to be getting any surprise phone calls in your you know, board meeting on your iPad.
Hopefully. Right, and if you're running Skype on your iPad, or if I am, there won't be any surprise calls there because it doesn't work for me.
Wah, wah. Wah, wah, wah. So it's estimated that they sold 50,000 of those iPads in 2 hours.
You know, I think the estimate numbers are total crap.
I think so, too. I don't think that... What were they doing? They were looking at order numbers and how much those numbers differed over time, and people are ordering other things on Apple.com, and some people are ordering, you know, multiple iPads and all that stuff.
I did read somewhere that on an average day, Apple's online store does about 15,000 just orders in general. Oh. So factor that into 2 hours, 15,000 a day versus 50,000 in 2 hours.
Yeah, I did see a graph that kind of split up the general Apple orders from the iPad orders, but I have no idea how they figured that out and how they... I also saw I guess it was a survey from the Apple Store employees on how what types of iPads were being... requested, and it was kind of a very equal split between the 16, 32, and 64 models.
You know, okay, so when I say the numbers are total crap, how about if I qualify that a little bit? Because I know people are going to start sending me emails and telling me what a horrible, mean person I am, and I'm okay with that because I know I am. The numbers that I have seen were actually compiled through a very clever system that one of the TMO forum members, I guess, came up with, and his screen name's Diego. And yeah, it's based on order numbers, and so you can kind of figure out based on those order numbers what's going on. The problem is the order numbers are based on actual pre-order sales, and it does not take into account the number of people that reserved.
Right, yeah.
And I'm actually one of the people that reserved, so mine is going to be waiting for me at the Flatiron Crossing store on the 3rd. And so that doesn't count as a sale until I go in and pick the thing up and hand them my credit card. Hmm. And so there's no tracking for that until those are actually purchased. So these numbers that we have, I think, are probably artificially low. And that's taking into account the fact that there are a lot of people that will reserve but not show up and buy. Even still, there's a lot of people like me that did the reservation and absolutely will be there laying out money to walk out the door with an iPad.
Well, now I have a question or concern that I hadn't really thought about. So, because I did the pre-order thing. So mine's pre-ordered, going to be shipped because I'm getting the 3G model. So you're saying if I did the whole pickup in-store thing, I just have a reservation number and...
You don't even have a number.
Yeah, you don't give them anything. I think they just know your name and
so now what about these shortages we're hearing? Does that mean if you're not there at, you know, 8 a.m., if you're like there at, you can't get there till 6 that evening, that there's good odds you're not going to
get a window of
reservation?
8 a.m. to 3 p.m., I believe, okay. Is what?
It's
3 p.m.
9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
9 a.m. to 3
p.m. So if you get there at 2:58 and you have your reservation,
you'll have an iPad.
There is a guarantee.
I believe they put your name on it or in some fashion. Your name on it. Otherwise,
then is the opportunity, all those people who didn't show up to pick theirs up at 3:01, everybody else
those
waiting in line
all,
outside, they're up
all
for grabs.
Those people can buy iPads. Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know if when Skype dropped out, if I missed anything about the rumors about shortages of iPads in stores.
No, we didn't talk about that yet.
Okay. Well, then I'll just jump right into that and
that's
say
what I'm curious about.
I think that's total crap. I think that the people that are saying, oh my God, you won't be able to get an iPad if you reserved one, are basing that there's a couple analysts, financial analysts, that said, oh my God, Apple can't get parts. The iPad's going to be delayed another month. I think there's people that are basing these shortages on that information, which I think is flat out wrong. And if Apple wasn't able to have enough parts to actually build the iPads that they need, then we would have seen a very, very restricted launch thing where you wouldn't even be able to reserve and you'd be limited to two tops for pre-orders and probably only one for pre-orders. And we didn't see that. You know, they did impose the, hey, you can only order two thing.
But weren't
which makes sense.
Weren't there some customers that called in and said that they wanted to switch their orders to like an in-store pickup and the representative on the phone said they couldn't do that or something like that?
From what I understand, and if I'm wrong, I'm looking forward to your emails. It had to do with the way the orders were processed. So if you did a pre-order, the way the system works, it ships to a specific address, which is not an Apple Store address. And that's why they couldn't switch their pre-orders to in-store pickups. And but if they wanted to do an in-store pickup, they could cancel their pre-order.
Yep.
And then reserve an iPad in the store.
But they'd be supposedly at the back of the in-store line. But if what you guys are saying is true, then that doesn't matter because Apple's gauging how many units to ship to a given store based on reservations, right?
Exactly. And when they've done similar types of things with iPhones, it's worked out just fine.
Hey, Adam. Hey, Adam.
Yep.
Are you... You're going to hate me. Are you recording?
Yes.
Oh, good. That's fantastic because mine conked out.
Yes, I
Isn't
am
that
recording.
Great, folks? Ugh. Adam's the best. Okay.
Adam totally rocks. Not only does he rock, but he's a rock star.
See, I'm recording with QuickTime and QuickTime 7, the good QuickTime, or it used to be good. It's been crazy on my computer lately. But I won't go into that because this isn't the Mac complaining cast.
Yeah.
That's Adam's show, right?
Mac complaining cast. Yeah, that's my show.
I'm sorry.
MacCast.com.
Yeah. Okay. So did you guys see that obviously we haven't, there are some applications.
Wait, before we move on, I got one question about this thing. So right now I just went on to see if I could still reserve one for a store. So I could reserve an iPad right now. And how many can I reserve?
Two.
So if you really want to make sure the store in your area has stock, does that mean you just get together a bunch of group of friends and like all pre-order, you know, reserve two and then just don't pick them up?
That's brilliant.
Then they'll have a lot of stock for anybody else to come in and just pick up, right?
You know, that is absolutely brilliant. Not only is that brilliant, that's an incredible community service that you can do as a enter the name of the podcast here listener to make sure that all of your friends, family, and loved ones can get their iPad after 3 p.m. in your time zone on April 3rd.
I know my loved ones need at least four or five iPads, so you'll be doing a great service for them.
And Apple won't come after me or anything, because you do have to sign into your .Mac account, I noticed. So I'm not going to do it.
Do you have to sign anything that says,
like, a personal letter from Steve Jobs? You didn't pick up your iPad.
You didn't pick up your iPad. I'm sending someone after you.
I'm betting, Adam, that you will get a letter from Steve Jobs, and it will be, "You prick. How could you possibly tell people to do this? You found our loophole. You are dead to me." Love, Steve.
You know, it's weird that you bring that up, because I thought it was kind of a like a Dan Lyons fake Steve kind of move to, like, have everybody, oh, here we're going to teach Apple a lesson. We're going to have them, you know, bring a whole bunch of iPads to this one Apple store that nobody goes to.
I'm just here asking the questions. I'm not saying do it. I'm just throwing the question out there. And since we you know, our theory is they're using this to gauge interest or stock at a certain location.
Yeah,
just throwing it out there as a social, obviously the two limit is gonna prevent that. So nobody do that, but it's just interesting.
Right. Okay. So moving right along to
backpedal.
Yeah. Back.
Okay.
Okay. So, according to people who look at the iPad's home screen, the iPad will not have some of the applications that the iPhone has, such as the weather app, the clock app, stocks app. And I believe Gruber mentioned that he knew from somebody who knows about this stuff that they tried scaling up the weather and stocks apps, and it ended up looking super weird being scaled up like that. And which is kind of unfortunate, because I really like my weather application. I don't really use any third-party weather applications, because I feel like the interface is just too bleh for me to get the basic info, like temperature and like a 5-day forecast. That's all the basic information I need. So some people theorize that there would be a dashboard mode, and I think we talked a little bit about that, and I guess there won't be a dashboard mode. So
yeah. Yeah, that was a little bit of my thing. I don't know if I really want, like, dashboard mode, like a dashboard app or something that you have to dump into, and then you can throw little widgets out, which I guess could be interesting. But my original theory was, you know, why aren't there certain apps that run in their standard native iPhone size, but just in a little window that's that size, and we can have, you know, multiple little ones of them sort of running on the desktop. So then you could have your clock app open and your weather app open, and it might look a little strange, I guess, but, you know, because they're all square as opposed to, you know, widgets, you can have the nice round clock and the I don't know, or just widgets. Why not have widgets on the iPad, little simple applications like a calculator, a clock, you know, defined within a certain restriction of, you know, features and functionality that can run in the background, even if they were the widgets like the dashboard that are, you know, web apps, which Apple never seemed to have a problem with in terms of using up resources or running in the background.
I'm betting it's because it would create, at least in Apple's mind, too much diversity in the iPhone platform.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm totally just kind of pulling that out of the air. Now, it would surprise me if Apple had an application that they're working on for the iPad that was like an info center app, and you could say, show me in this app my weather, my appointments for today, and whatever my stocks are that I want to watch.
What was that? What was that thing that they trademarked? Now you're making me think about, remember a while back everybody was speculating there was that weird, odd iGuide. Was it iGuide? Something like that?
That sounds really familiar.
Maybe that's it.
I have no idea what that is, so you should explain it.
Remember when everybody, leading up to the iPad, everybody was trying to figure out what the name was going to be, and there was all these sort of shell companies that Apple had set up and was filing trademarks under?
Sure.
Nobody remembers this.
I remember.
I remember that. I remember that they had several, dummy companies.
There was iSlate, and another one was called iGuide. And everybody looked at iGuide and went, well, that's not the name for the device. That's the name of some software application, either like a GPS turn-by-turn navigation app or some app that's going to run on the iPad.
So what you're implying is that maybe I just stumbled across what it is.
Yeah, well, that would seem like a viable name. And like, I thought the same thing. You know, one single app, either like a dashboard app that runs little widgets that you can load into it, or has little, you know, wells that you can put these little widgety devices into, or, you know, why not? Yeah, iGUIDE, why not? It has a dictionary, it has, you know, a calculator, a clock, a weather thingy, and maybe you can move them around. I don't know. I'm totally,
yeah, that does sound widgety to me.
Speculating, but
yeah, the widget thing in and of itself, I don't see happening, because that doesn't fit in with the iPhone interface style. But coming up with a widget-ish app, meaning an app where you can pick and choose which bits of information show up in it and then move them around so that they show up in the places you want,
yep,
that totally makes sense.
Yeah, I why not have it be all in one?
I think we'll see that solution in 4.0.
Yeah, well, in getting back to the reasoning, I totally buy Gruber's reasoning that, I mean, what are you going to do? Blow up the clock app and it looks silly.
Sure, yeah. Well, I can see an interface for, like, the weather application, for example. If they have a, you know, how mail looks on the iPad with the side panel with your individual messages, and you can tap it and see the full thing on the right side. Maybe with the weather application, you could have the you know, your forecast on the left, and then on the right, there's just a big you know, a big Doppler map or something like that. And if you tap on the specific city, maybe it'll zoom in and give you specific weather for that.
Well, and why couldn't some of these things also be sort of merged on the iPad? So in other words, it would make sense to me that could I have a clock in my calendar app, you know, a world clock down at the bottom of my calendar app on something like the iPad?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or in the Maps app, can I have the weather as part of the Maps app, you know, in a little bar along the bottom? Hey, there's the current weather for your current GPS location.
Yeah, but then again, all these solutions that we're coming up with, having them be combo applications, almost is totally different from how the iPhone OS is laid out right now.
Okay, but let's look at this too. Time is probably another factor, which I think Gruber also mentions. And how much do you use the clock app, the stock app, the weather app? I use the weather app probably more than any other one of those bundled apps on my iPhone, but still, in comparison to the third-party apps and the other things that I run, address book, calendar, mail, all those things, they're in the, you know, one-digit percentages versus if I really probably thought about it.
Yeah, I use the clock app actually quite a bit, mostly for alarms and stopwatch things.
But aren't there third-party free clock apps that are probably even better than what Apple?
Even better? I don't know. You're talking to the wrong person, because I hate a lot of applications, but I don't have a lot of faith in these third-party applications that try to, you know, duplicate functionality, et cetera.
And what if Apple just made the apps? And I think another theory that was thrown out is, hey, maybe Apple will just throw them up on the App Store and hey,
yeah,
you can download them.
Like they already, like they're planning to do with the iBook Store.
Right.
Right. Or, you know, why isn't the calculator app from Apple just like the remote app from Apple, just like the, you know, .Mac Gallery app from Apple? You just download it if you want it.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
Then if you don't need it, you don't need it. Because frankly, the stocks app, I wish I could delete.
Mm. Oh, I'd love to be able to delete that.
Oh, yeah, I did that because I jailbreak. It's gone, boy.
It's relegated to like the last screen on my device, because I, you know, I will push in, but it probably is very useful to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you hear that Steve Jobs said there won't be any tethering for from the iPhone to an iPad? So if you get a Wi-Fi iPad, you can't use your iPhone's data service to give internet to your iPad.
And that totally makes sense.
It makes sense in the world of non
in the business world, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, in that world, not in the ponies and rainbows world that I like to live in.
It's a pretty world, too. It really is.
It is.
The other thing that I think you have to take that with a grain of salt when I read that, because that supposedly somebody emailed Steve Jobs and he replied back and said no. Very often, he focuses only on he very much is that part of Apple that is, we don't talk about things that we don't talk about. And so the iPad day one will not tether. So yes, it will not tether. I mean, that it's that absolute when you're, I think, when you're dealing with Steve Jobs. Just my theory from past experience. The iPod won't do video because it doesn't do video.
Until it does video.
And then it does video. Yeah. So I think it's a very black and white line. That's just how that's how Apple internally responds. Will there be tethering on the iPad? No, because we haven't done a deal. We haven't talked to anybody about it. You know, is it internally maybe been discussed and talked about and worked on and on a schedule to be supported at some point? Possibly. But they're not. He's not going to say that when somebody asks him about it. He's going to say, no, it doesn't tether.
Yeah, the iPhone didn't do tethering until it did tethering.
Right.
And true story, it actually does do tethering, just not in the United States.
Even still.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, Michael, same thing, though. If Apple was asked about it, or an Apple representative was asked about it before they announced it, it would be, no, it doesn't tether.
Right.
Will it tether? No, it doesn't tether.
Yeah. Okay, so...
They don't talk in future tense, I guess is what I'm saying, at Apple.
Well, yeah, you don't want to leak, you know. How does that saying go? Isn't it funny, a ship that leaks from the top? Something like that?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was a quote from Steve Jobs years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the controlled leaks that they would do.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so moving right along... The accessories for the iPad, which are pretty cool, the keyboard dock and the regular dock and the case, have all been delayed in their ship dates. They've all been pushed back. It looks like the keyboard was initially slated to be shipped in mid-April, and now it's being set to later.
The keyboard is. Is the keyboard late April or is it May?
It might be May.
I think the keyboard is May, and the book cover is late April.
Now, is that do we know if that's because of pre-orders? Because I ordered one, by the way. You know, I ordered a bunch of those accessories, which nicely forced my order up over $1,000, which was great. did you guys order a bunch of those accessories with yours? I did. Well,
no, I couldn't because I did the reservation.
You did the reservation, yeah. I pre-ordered.
Are you getting the case?
I'm not getting the case.
I feel like it's the most functional of all the... Obviously, the keyboard's fantastic, but it's kind of dorky. But did you get the wireless or did you get the docked?
Well, I already have the wireless keyboard, so I'm covered there, the Bluetooth keyboard.
So you just have a dock.
So I ordered the wired docked one, mainly because I just want to review it and see what it's like, and you know, then I didn't order the dock because I'll use the little keyboardy thingy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the keyboard and the 10-watt USB adapter will be available in May, and the soft case will be delayed until mid-April.
Right, and so the VGA adapter and the dock only dock thing will be available
for the
launch on the 3rd.
Yep.
Yeah, I ordered the VGA adapter because actually I figured that could possibly be useful for. I'm assuming I can find something to hook to that to actually capture screencast kind of video stuff. Or I'm hoping
that would be cool. Maybe like an ITV sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to see if there's a VGA to. I figure that'd be easier than some sort of other weird converter.
Yeah. Now, see, I'm planning on using the VGA adapter all the time because I'm always out speaking at user groups and doing presentations.
Reason. Yeah,
that's and yes, I'm going to do that stuff from an iPad.
The keynote type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hooking it to my TV for movies and what have you.
Yeah, did you guys notice that when the pre-orders started, Apple added a lot of extra information to the iPad site? So if you go to the apple.com/iPad, and especially the gallery part, the gallery is really cool because now not only do they have photos of the iPad, they also have photos of most of the included applications. I'm pretty sure those weren't there before, right?
No, that stuff all showed up on the 12th.
Yeah, that's fun stuff. You should check that out if you haven't already looked at it. So you have the all the stock applications plus the iBooks application.
Yeah.
Which is very, yeah.
That the cool thing was the announcement or the confirmation that you'll be able to put your own EPUB on there.
That made me so happy.
I didn't see that. So how does that work? Do we know
through iTunes, you can drop your own EPUBs into, I'm assuming iTunes, right?
Yeah, they said through iTunes.
So drop your own EPUBs in there and sync them over.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Into the iBooks app.
That was something that I was really hoping they would announce because I look at all these people that are using products like Adobe InDesign to create company materials or books that they want to share with friends or distribute in other ways. And now they'll be able to do that because they can create open or like not copy protected EPUBs.
Well, yeah. And the interesting thing about that too is it opens up other stores. So it seems like Apple's looking at iBooks or the iBook store more like they do, MP3s or audio files on the iPod. You know, as long as they're not DRM'd, well, you can get them from wherever you please.
Right. And I think that's a really smart move on Apple's part.
Okay, before we move any further, we have to talk about our second sponsor, and that is GoToAssist Express. If you are in the business of supporting people on computers, Mac or PC, you need to check out GoToAssist Express. It is very cool, and here's why. GoToAssist Express, if you're not familiar already, allows you to remotely control and see someone else's computer, so you can check it out, control it, look at what's going on, help them with instead of walking them through on the phone, which is just the hardest thing to do ever because you don't know, oh, did you click that thing? You know, well, you know, what's on your screen? Okay, what is that? Okay, well, what did you click? Oh, that's not what I told you to click. Well, you know, you need to go back and just phone support is just terrible. And that's why you should check out GoToAssist Express. It allows you to, the way it works is, and this is the best, this is the best read I've ever done of this ad ever. And by that, I mean the worst, but so here's how it works. You have an application on your computer, the GoToAssist application. You open it up. You don't have to log in. You don't have to do anything. You just open the application and you say, hey, go to this URL and type in this code. And in a matter of like 1 minute, because all it does is just, you know, opens it up, the person on the other end opens the URL, types in the meeting ID, and then you see their screen. And not only do you see their screen, you can control it with your keyboard, your mouse. You can see what they're doing. They can have control over it. You can send them files, and you can see what's running on their system. You can see, you know, what processes are going, what applications they have installed, what their hardware is, which is very cool. You can see down to like what kind of RAM sticks are in each slot, which is just awesome. And it's very, very easy on both ends. Like I said, all you have to do is open up the application on your end. So it's very easy for you and it's very easy for them as well. They really don't have to do anything. There's no configuration, no setup. It just works. And best of all, it gets rid of all the special helping stuff, the helper application on their end as soon as the session is over. So you don't have to worry about uninstalling. You don't have to tell them to uninstall anything. It's very simple. It's 128-bit. SSL encrypted, so it's very secure. It has the integrated live chat, like I said, full system profile, running applications and processes. You can actually do up to 8 sessions at once. So if you're helping one person with a software update, let's say, and that's just going in the background, you can help someone else while that's happening. You can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/Ally, and you get that free 30-day trial. I used it. I love it. It's very cool. And I'm not just saying that because they're sponsors. I think it's a fantastic service. And Adam, I understand you've used it, right?
Yeah. Actually, my trial ran out recently, and
yeah,
I need to get it back.
Yeah, it's even if you're not an IT professional, even if you're just the the computer geek in your family, and people occasionally call you and say, hey, how do I do this? It's just great to have in your little virtual toolbox of tricks and things to help people out. It's just because, like I said, it's as simple as opening the app, telling them to go to a URL, and then you see their screen. It's great. Try it free for 30 days. Go to assist.com/Ally, and we thank them so much for sponsoring the iPhone This Week in iPhone podcast, whatever we decide to call it. And with that, I think we're going to move on to our iPhone picks, right?
Yeah, I think we need to picks. We need to get out. I'm scanning the show notes. No, I don't need to. I'm just looking to see if there's anything left over that we absolutely have to talk about. But I think picks.
There's the multitasking thing that several Apple Insider quoted some people with a quote unquote proven track record saying that we're going to be seeing multitasking again in iPhone 4.0, and then 9 to 5 Mac also saw some stuff in the iPhone SDK that possibly indicated that we'll see some multitasking stuff, although some people say that that's just not true based on that information.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Adam?
Yeah.
Or Jeff?
Jeff,
you'll have to talk too.
All right, so I'll just jump in. If Apple introduces multitasking, I hope they introduce multitasking in a smart way and not the way most people would like them to do it. And I'm basing that on dealing with the Nexus One and realizing after the fact that there's applications running that I didn't intend to have running. So I'm hoping that the multitasking most people want is not what happens.
Yeah, the general response I've heard from people with regards to the multitasking on the Android platform is very similar to you in that, like, at some point you find yourself thinking, hey, I'm hearing audio coming out of my phone, but I have no idea which application is doing that. You know, you have to go and hunt down which application is making a little beep every 3 minutes or something like that.
So that was my question. Is that the main negative? Just that you don't realize things are running that you didn't want running, and it's just kind of a pain in the rear? Or is it, you know, you're seeing actual performance degradation because of that? You're seeing battery degradation because of that? Or
I think
all of the above? Or
I definitely saw battery life degradation.
And, matching Apple's original sort of thing about multitasking on a device like the iPhone, it is, you know, the benefit to detriment trade-off just doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, I think there's a better way to do the whole multitasking concept on the smartphone devices. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've offered my suggestion up before, which is sort of like the frozen state thing where an application can go into the background, and then at certain intervals, you allow it to update its information. But then the rest of the time, it's still frozen. So then when you hop back, you have this persistent state that's been maintained, but the whatever needed to be updated happened in the background. But the whole full-on, the application is running and doing everything it would normally do. You just can't see the screen. I think that's kind of a bad idea. And now maybe I'm just kind of a little slow in the head when it comes to multitasking on handheld devices. But if I was having trouble with it, I can only imagine that there's a lot of other people that would have trouble with it as well.
Yeah, I think that the way – I keep going back to the pre because I think that's a fantastic example of how you can make that very obvious. If you use Pro Switcher on your jailbroken iPhone, it does the pre-like thing. But also, you have to have another thing called Backgrounder to make the Pro Switcher thing work. And that includes the ability to add a little badge to any application that is running in the background. So if you have Maps or some other application running, there will be a little indicator on the app's icon, so you'll know, even if you're not looking at Pro Switcher, whether an application is running. And I honestly haven't had a lot of battery or performance issues with backgrounded applications. Maybe that's just because I don't background things that don't make sense to be backgrounded, like games or something. I generally do like OmniFocus and I don't know, maybe AirPhones occasionally. I don't do
right, but you're aware of which applications are running in the background.
Right, based on the Pro Switcher thing.
Right, and that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's probably one of the biggest hurdles that Apple is working to get over with multitasking. So it's very obvious to not only to me, but also to my mom.
Okay, if it's obvious to your mom, then that's probably a pretty good implementation.
Yeah. Okay, so if we're done, I think we're done with all the iPhone news. We're going to talk about our iPhone picks. And which one of you guys wants to go first?
Jeff. Jeff's going to go
first. Okay, no problem. First.
I'm waking up my iPhone. Okay, so my app this week is called Juxtapose Junior. And it's or Juxtapose Lite. Well, that's cool. The name shows up as Juxtapose Junior on your home screen, but when the app launches, it's called Juxtaposer Lite. That's awesome. So, okay, so the deal is, it's this application that lets you load in images into it and then mix them together. So you can do things like take one person's body and put another person's face on and then make a new image of this combined person. And it's just this wonderfully fun little application, and you don't need any special Photoshop skills because you just use your finger to erase out the stuff you don't want and then zoom stuff in or shrink its size. You can get everything to the size you want. And then you just, line everything up, and that's it. Then you have this fun little image where you put your friend's head onto your cat's body or I don't know. Maybe if you break up with your significant other, you can put different faces on their bodies in the pictures or erase them out, whatever.
How many people have you put like cat heads on their bodies? Because that's what I'm looking at it in the app store. And the two examples they have is a guy with a dog head and another guy with a cat head.
You know, I actually haven't done any animals yet, but I've been taking my friends and mixing them together. And what I've been realizing is that if my friends were to breed, that their offspring would be incredibly disturbing.
Oh, yeah, like the like that segment, if they breed it. Is that a Conan thing? I don't remember who did the...
I don't remember who did that. It might be Conan. It sounds very Conan.
Let's say it was Conan.
It was Conan.
Yeah. But you're talking about the application Juxtaposer Lite.
Yes, and it's a free application, and it's great fun at parties.
Cool.
Go check it out.
Awesome. Juxtaposer Lite, and it is free. Adam, what is your pick?
Okay. I'm just seeing an interesting thing here. Anyway, sorry. With my pick, I was looking at my pick, and... or one of my potential picks. So I'm going to ask you guys. I have two picks. So do you want the one application that I'm addicted to, but I have some complaints about, but also has a dual function, or do you want just the app that's a game that I'm incredibly addicted to?
I want the first one.
Okay. So that's good, because that's kind of the one I wanted to do. So the app is called Quizarium. Have you guys seen this yet?
No.
So it's a online multiplayer trivia app. And I think it was one of the featured apps, or I saw it up on the App Store. But basically, you go on there and you answer trivia questions, and there's all these rooms. So you launch the application, there's a bunch of rooms, a couple lobbies, and there's either easy or hard questions, and then there's a mix of all kinds of categories. So you jump in there, and it uses the Plus, I think it's the Plus network or something like that. I don't know. It's on 5, but Quizarium.com is the website. And then you just answer trivia questions. So the question pops up, and then everybody in the room attempts to answer it. And then whoever gets it first gets points. And you score points per day, and there's leaderboards. And, you know, so pretty basic in terms of it's a trivia application. What I like about it is it's multiplayer. The secondary function that I discovered is I've been wanting to figure out how to do the whole landscape two-thumb typing thing on my iPhone and get really good at it. What I discovered is Quizarium, more than being a trivia game, is a typing tutor.
Oh, yeah, because you have to do it quickly.
You have to type really fast. And I'm discovering that there's some people out there who have very quick thumbs. Not only fast, but I guess that also has a third function, because you also have to know how to spell. Or learn how to spell.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because otherwise the computer won't register as a win, right?
Right, exactly. They did give you the nice thing where you have a choice to make when you set up the app, because you can have auto-correction turned on, which can help you if you start typing the right answer and it happens to pop up, because you can enter it quicker. Or you can turn it off, because sometimes you're trying to answer a question and it auto-corrects it and it ends up the wrong answer. So
yeah,
you have that difficult choice to make. But at the end of it all, I'm learning to become a much better two-thumb typer because of this program. And I'm completely addicted to it. And it's fun because you can go in there and you're playing with other people all over the world. I think they have it broken up by countries. Now, a couple complaints. One, it's relatively new. And I think the volume of questions they have in their database is a little bit light. So one of the reasons I'm picking it is I'm hoping more people will get in there and more people. You can submit questions through their website. So if you go to the support area on Quizarium.com, you can actually add your own questions. And I think there's a little bit good and a little bit bad, because my other complaint is I think they're not screening those that closely yet. I don't know how big their staff is, but occasionally you'll get really dumb questions. But what's really nice about it is it has a thumbs up, thumbs down voting system on the questions. So you can say, oh, that was a dumb question as you're playing, and then that will get factored back in, and supposedly it'll get better and better. So I'm hoping with more people getting on it, it's relatively new, that it will become a better application. It's good now, but it does have some room for improvement, and hopefully the developers are listening and watching and improve it up. And there's some other features, like you can award stars to people if they're doing really well, and it's just fun. It's a fun community trivia app. And I have the Trivial Pursuit app, which I think I mentioned on a prior episode. This is more fun because it's, you know, interactive with a bunch of people. Oh, and you can create your own rooms. So if there's not a room that you like, you can create your own room in a specific category at a specific quiz level. So if you want just all entertainment questions, hard. And then you can also set the number of questions before the game ends. So you can have it be infinite. You can say, I want this to be a 50 question game, a 20 question game. So it has a lot of nice functionality. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. It's called Quizarium.
Free.
It's free.
Yeah.
And I have it. I just already downloaded it. I want to play it. I'm not going
to
play it.
We'll have to set up a room. I set up a Maccast room when I'm in there. So if people see Maccast's room, come join me. I'm hanging out in there answering trivia questions.
Cool.
Very cool.
I'm going to try that for sure. Okay. So my iPhone pick this week is called Music ID, and it is very similar to Shazam, except that, does Shazam do lyrics at all? Will it give you a button to say, hey, I want lyrics?
I don't know.
I'm gonna go check it really quick.
I can look. You can look, yeah.
Yeah. So what Music ID allows you to do is, one of the first options is, you know, do the whole Shazam listening to something that's playing in the background thing. So you can do that, and it'll give you the information, the track and artist and all that stuff, and offer you the option to buy the track if you want from iTunes. But the reason I like it is because it lets you get lyric information. And I love looking at lyrics when I'm listening to songs. So it lets you do the, listening to what's going on outside of your iPhone, but even better, and this is why I like it for the most part, is Shazam won't let you identify something that's coming out of your iPhone, and for the most part, that makes a lot of sense. But for the lyric thing, if I'm listening to a song, I want to pull up the lyrics. All I have to do is open up Music ID, tap on the Now Playing tab, and it looks at what's now playing through the iPod on your iPhone, and it will go out and pull that same information, the same information, the artist info and the track info and the album artwork and all that stuff, but it'll also give you the option to look at lyrics. And for the most part, it's really good at finding that. So the reason I like Music ID is the lyric lookup feature. It's 99 cents, and it'll pull up lyrics for both songs that are playing in your iPhone and songs are playing outside if you want to identify it like Shazam style. And for the most part, it works really well. I haven't really run into any problems with it identifying music, although I haven't really pounded too hard on the external identification thing. But for the most part, it's great for lyrics. So if you're into lyrics, you want to look up the lyrics for songs that are playing on your phone, Music ID, it's 99 cents. Music ID is one word. And that is my pick. Do you guys have any cool lyric applications that you've seen other than this? Because most of them were pretty sucky.
You know, I've never had great luck with the lyrics apps.
There used to be good ones back in the day, but then the RIAA came out and did something weird, like, I want to say 3 years ago. When there were all these apps that could go out and pull, you know, from like the, what was the online, the music lyric database thing. Now I'm blanking on the acronym. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name either, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The online music database. And then for some reason, I think the record labels like took objection to that, or they got shut down, and then it was just too hard for the developers to go out and get the data and everything kind of
license it and stuff. Yeah. I think there's a licensing fee involved in some of that stuff too.
Yeah. So it used to be great, and then if you asked me 3 years ago, I had a couple that I ran on my Mac, and of course I'm blanking on their names now, that did the same kind of thing. It would scan through your iTunes library. There was one that would do the same thing. It would be running in the background, and as you were playing music, it would go out and if the lyrics weren't in the track in iTunes, it would go out and grab them for you. And it was a great app. And then, you know, so just through the process of listening to your iTunes library, eventually all of your tracks would have lyrics attached to them. I think it was actually a widget. It actually ran as a...
Yeah, I had that. Gracenote. Remember,
Gracenote is the database. Yeah, and before it became Gracenote, I think when it became Gracenote was when it started requiring not long after it started requiring the licensing and stuff like that. Prior to that, it was like an open... I think it was an open project that people just worked on, and then... They said, you know, lyrics are copyrighted works, and you have to pay for the rights to something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm totally making things up now, but...
But Music ID...
But it sounds good.
It does all sound good. Music ID will let you get the lyrics. I'm not sure where they're getting that from, but it works pretty well. And it also saves everything that you tag, which is another awesome thing, because I like to, If you're tagging something as you're going down the road, like you're listening with a friend, then that's good to, you know, just tag it and check it out later. It's also very pretty, which is a big plus for me. So with that, the action item for this podcast, for this episode, is to let us know how you feel about the name, as far as if you want to keep going with This Week in iPhone, or if you want something else, and whether or not you have a suggestion on an alternative, either way, let us know. podcast@iphonealley.com. Send us an email, we'll get that figured out soon, hopefully. You can also check us out still at iphonealley.com/podcast. That's where you'll get the show notes, as well as our podcast or our iPhone app picks. You can check that out there, iphonealley.com/podcast. You can send feedback, general feedback, if you'd like, podcast@iphonealley.com. You can check out GoTo Assist Express, GoToAssist.com/Alley. That supports us, and we appreciate it if you check it out. It's also a very cool thing to use. And our other sponsor was Cam Alert, KAMALERT, in the App Store, $4.99. And let's see, Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, twitter.com/jgamet. And Adam is at the MacCast, maccast.com, and twitter.com/maccast. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And with that, another whatever podcast is done.
And happy birthday, Ken Ray.
Happy birthday, Ken Ray.
Happy birthday, Ken.
Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh. A stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? They have to get them and put them away.